Everybody let us know how Kenny did in the comment section down below.
There is no comment section.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 1 year playing at least 52 games, and then we talk about them. My name is Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm the head elf.
And this is our 2019 Christmas cast.
Christmas cast.
Christmas time is here, and as always, the best way to spread Christmas cheer is to talk about gaming throughout the year.
For well all said. To hear.
So that's what we're going to do throughout this episode. This is our annual Christmas episode where instead of talking about a single retro video game, we do a few different things. We do a general retrospective of gaming in the current year. So for this episode, we're going to talk about some of the big video game releases this year. We're going to share our thoughts on some of the major gaming events that have occurred in 2019, and then we are going to conclude with a glimpse at the future and talk about some of our goals and resolutions for the year 2020, a new decade.
I'm ready.
I don't know if I am.
What, I'm so ready.
Decade? I'm so ready for 19 to end, but a new decade's a big deal. I don't
That's
know if
true.
I signed
up for
that.
It's a lot of pressure.
That is. It's it is. True, like, I'm good for a new year, a new decade, again, another
level.
No, it's
level. Cool. It's going to be good.
It will
maybe
be.
I'm just grumpy, but the 20-teens have not been my favorite.
I agree. Mm. Although the 20-teens are where all of us got married.
That's yeah. true.
And 20-teens is where we started a podcast.
Yeah.
That's so true. At least two good things.
I graduated college.
Yeah. All of those things. So 20-teens have been somewhat good to us. How has it been for you, listener? Let us know in the comment section down below.
Oh, what?
Sorry, I'm so used to YouTube. I'm used to YouTube.
You're a YouTuber now, yeah.
All right, so depending on how good or bad this episode goes will dictate how good or bad 2020, the decade
the
of
decade?
2020 will be.
Okay, yeah. Good.
We're in for a world of hurt then.
No. Here we go. We have historically began this episode with a game that I host and that Kenny and Nolan play.
And I win every year.
Nope.
I don't remember. I do know that 2 years ago you won. Did you win last year as well?
I think so, but I don't know.
Are you the undisputed champion?
I believe I am.
Well, this year, because you are the champion, we're doing something slightly different. We are still playing a game. However,
but it's your turn to get to whoop Nolan in front of everybody.
Just put different people in front of Nolan until he wins.
Yep.
No, he'll win this year. I'm bad with trivia.
Year.
Did you?
Yes.
There's a good chance that's true, but I'm self-confident enough and enough committed to trash talk.
Right.
And good enough at repressing terrible memories. That I have no recollection of that whatsoever. I only have recollections of beating Nolan really badly.
Sorry, you're still talking? I'm asleep.
Well, I will say that I know one thing for sure, and that is that I have never won one of these games.
Well, we'll give you a chance, because it's time for this year's Christmas cast Christmas quiz. And so here's how I want to do it, because...
What? Wait. What? I don't want to play if you're running it.
Kenny's what? In charge now, guys.
I'm in charge. No. I'm the quiz master.
Everybody pull up your chair. Kenny's in charge. He's
like
Santa.
That. Okay.
Okay, it does mean these are going to be probably a little bit more challenging questions than they've been in the past.
Oh, my gosh.
But not,
why did I do this?
But not impossible.
Sure.
Okay.
I also, in the past, we've just gone... Christmas themed generally, which is fun and festive, but I thought we would say slightly even more on topic this year and do video game Christmas related questions.
What?
How does that even work?
I we'll
no
find
games
out.
Are based. So, okay.
Yeah, there's not many overtly Christmas video games.
Okay.
And so I didn't have a lot to work with here. Christmas games sell a lot of video games, but it's not like movies. Movies can,
wait,
you know, make $1 million being about Christmas. You don't have a lot of actual Christmas-themed video games, but there are a few. Right. And then there's a few just Christmas-related video game things that I want to touch on as well. So thanks to the power of the internet and my poor Googling skills, and a number of, you know, lists that people curated that I was able to jump off of and shamelessly steal from and modify to meet our needs, I've got a list of questions that are Christmas video game themed. Are you guys ready?
All right. Yep. Been ready. Right. For a few minutes.
Still talking?
Let's do this.
Here's how this is going to work, because going first is often an advantage in quiz games. We're going to do one kind of rapid fire question. That the first person to answer correctly will get to go first in our game. So
okay.
Here we go. So this popular Christmas movie from the early 90s followed The Money from the screen to lots of smaller screens.
Home
the
Alone.
The first person to say nope or nah
nope.
or nah,
nah
or whatever
nah.
When I list a console that did not have a Home Alone themed game release, we'll get to go first on our quiz.
Which console did not have a Home Alone themed game release?
Yep.
Okay.
So I'm going to start listing consoles. When I say one that didn't have it, you say nope, you win. Here we go.
We're both going to miss it.
Nintendo Entertainment System. Super Nintendo. Genesis. Game Boy, Master System, Game Gear.
Nope.
Amiga.
Nope.
And you're both wrong.
okay, keep going.
And, well, I mean, like, you both already missed it.
So what is your backup
PC
plan?
As well. Every single one of those consoles had, including the Amiga.
So no one could win, you moron?
No, I mean, of the two of you, Nolan got it the most right, but I also have...
What? Wait,
Dustin.
Nolan.
Well,
listen.
That's a great question.
Listen, Nolan, is he saying that all of those did, meaning
yes.
None of them were the...
He's
right
saying
answer.
We didn't have, no one had a chance of winning that round, which, by the way, was only to determine who goes first.
I could have listed more consoles.
Wait,
like,
so whoever stayed silent would have won?
Yes. it's a great question. Okay, first of all, trick questions are totally relevant. Second, the fact that this many Home Alone themed games was released is mind-boggling, and that it even went back to things like the Amiga. Is just kind of crazy and fun trivia. I thought our users would like it. Since you don't feel like it's very fair, here's what's going to happen. The first person to answer the following question is actually going first.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Home Alone features an actor who likes video games. What's his favorite video game?
Joe Pesci.
It's Alien Rappers.
We played it on...
Toe Jam and Earl.
There it is. Okay. So, Dustin, well answered. Thanks for remembering things that have come up in the podcast previously. You get to go... first. So question number one. If you miss it, Nolan can have a chance to steal. If at the end of all our questions there's a tie, I do have a tie break ready for you.
Ready.
In 2005, the internet was a really special place. One of the gems of this era of the internet was a Flash-based Christmas game called Elf Bowling. Which video game system received a version of the game for those wanting to not play it in a web browser?
95, you said?
2005.
Oh, 2005. Elf Bowling?
Elf Bowling.
In 2005? I feel like that should be 95.
It totally feels like an early internet thing, but it wasn't that early.
2005, Elf Bowling. That's going to be your Xbox... No, it's Wii. Dang it. No, Xbox 360. I don't know when. I think that came out 2006. Xbox, final answer.
Okay, a negative. Nolan, do you have a guess?
03?
No, 2005.
5. Game Boy Advance?
It is the Game Boy Advance.
What?
Well answered.
Nolan played that game. He loved it.
Yes, no, he did. I didn't. That's just the time.
Nolan's a master at elf bowling.
It was a sign of the times. 05.
All right. So we're tied.
No. Right. Wait, how?
That's one for Nolan. You guys can help me keep track.
All right. Okay, one across the board.
Okay, so next question is for Nolan, because we'll take turns going first. In Days Before Christmas, D-A-Z-E, Days, you play as Santa platforming his way to recovering items stolen by an evil snowman. Sadly, this retro video game didn't make it to a release in the States because Sunsoft, the publisher, went bankrupt. We just talked about Sunsoft fairly recently. What system did you need to own if you wanted to play Days Before Christmas?
Did you say a year in there?
No. I didn't. This one's tough. I was hoping that the Sunsoft going bankrupt would give you a sense of time.
No.
But if not, you may have to take a shot in the dark.
And you said not released in the States?
It wasn't released in the States. It was released I think Europe and Australia, actually, but I'm not certain.
The Famicom.
No, it was not the Famicom.
Okay.
So me?
Yes.
Days Before Christmas, D-A-Z-E.
D-A-Z-E, as if you actually know this game. Like, all of these are obscure for reasons. No,
but I think I can use context clues, or at least try. You said Sunsoft, said bankrupt, and you also said Europe and Australia. So yes. I'm going to go the Mega Drive.
False.
Come on.
Days Before Christmas dropped on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. So Nolan was spiritually really close, but like it wasn't a Famicom title. It didn't come out of Japan.
You didn't hear me say Super?
like in spirit, you definitely were closer.
Okay.
I knew that was probably going to be the hardest question we had. So don't fret. Let's move on.
One Dustin, across the board. Yeah.
Which classic first person shooter has a winter themed third party release where you can shoot snowmen with a chain gun cannon?
What? First-person shooter.
Yep, and I'll give you a few options. Which classic first-person shooter has a winter-themed third-party release?
Yeah.
Where you can shoot snowmen with a chain gun cannon. Is it Quake, Wolfenstein, Heretic, Duke Nukem, or Doom?
Duke Nukem.
Yeah,
final answer.
Correct. Duke Nukem. Yeah! Well done.
All right, now we're one across the board.
We're tied up. So we go back to Nolan. So here you go. No joke, it would be crazy to call this 2013 superhero game a Christmas video game, but some people give it the diehard treatment. Because of a wintry ambience and a story that happens on Christmas Eve, they argue it is at the very least Christmas-y. Which superhero is featured in this game? Bonus points that actually aren't worth anything if you can actually tell me the title of the game.
Okay, so I'm not going to try to tell you the title. 2013. Superhero movies in 2013. Dark Knight came out in 2008. Rises was 12. Spider-Man?
It is not Spider-Man.
The correct answer is Batman, and it's one of the Arkham games. I'll go with Arkham City.
You got it right. It's Batman. It is not Arkham City. Dang. It's Arkham Origins.
Arkham Origins.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, that's on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Joker's theme music is kind of like Christmassy jingles.
I do not remember that. Actually, I didn't play.
Kenny started the question with no joke.
Yeah.
You gotta listen for the Kenny-ism.
It's true. I felt like these are hard, and so I try to give you years or other game context or something. Like, they're quizzes. All right. Who does that bring us to?
Dustin.
That brings us back to Dustin. Okay. This big-name video game launch title includes some Christmas shout-outs by including enemies in their winter-themed areas who, aptly enough, wear Santa hats.
Oh, I know this one.
So what are you wanting? A game title?
I'm wanting the game title. This big name video game launch title includes some Christmassy elements that show up.
World of Warcraft.
No. False.
Why are you laughing at me?
That's launch title for PC?
It's a great answer. Yeah. A launch title, yeah, launch title for computers.
You didn't know that World of Warcraft was a PC launch title?
No, that's news.
Oh, that's great.
No, steal.
Yeah, steal it, by all means. I thought that was your answer for a second. I was like, no.
Super Mario Odyssey for the Nintendo Switch. The Goombas were Santa Claus hats.
Yep.
Hey, I know that there's going to be Christmas-themed areas in World of Warcraft.
Yeah, around Christmas.
I'm sure there are.
When they so change it.
Me, I think you owe me $10 or whatever how this game goes.
No, I'm 3 up.
All right.
No, you're not. We're tied at 2.
Yeah, I know.
We're tied at 2, and I have one question left because there were some that you guys missed. So
I have to get it.
You have to get it, or you can steal it. I do have a tie break if it comes to it, if you both miss it.
Okay.
I won't.
But this is Nolan's first guess, so... this 2004 release for PS2, Xbox, and PC has some serious Christmas flair. Based on a popular Tim Burton film, The Nightmare Before Christmas, Oogie's Revenge is basically just a ripoff of Devil May Cry. What big-name publisher released this hack-and-slash title?
Devil May Cry knockoff?
Yes.
Then Capcom?
Ding, ding, ing. It is a Capcom game. Well, Bazinga. Done. No one doubts himself, but he's played games on the podcast and remembers stuff and is, you know.
The no joke one, games. I should have gotten that, but I'm an idiot.
Christmas sucks.
No, I always win. It's great.
You've never won, and you only won this year by 1 point because you got the question first. I was going to guess... Neversoft, so I wasn't going to get that one right either, but it was close.
We could have gone to the tiebreaker question. Answer.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Can you lead them from now on, Dustin?
No, Kenny did a great job.
No, he did really good. He did
he
really
wrote
good.
Those.
Except
great job,
for
Kenny.
The who goes first thing at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, that was a little gimmicky, but Christmas video games are gimmicky.
Everybody let us know how Kenny did in the comment section down below.
There is no comment section.
Don't forget to like and upvote.
All right. It is time to talk about gaming in 2019.
Yes.
And so we're going to go in order. We're not going to hit every single video game that was released this year, but we are going to hit some of our favorites or some of the most notable ones. Nolan, we'll start with you. What's one of the games that came out in 2019 that you think is worth talking about?
The one that I want to talk about, super relevant because of recent Game Awards that was issued to it. So this game won Game of the Year for 2019, and I'm super pleased about that.
Oh,
the game
no is, big deal. What
the game is Sekiro by From Software. So
do you know the subtitle? You never say it.
Shadows Die Twice.
Okay.
So that tagline there makes a lot more sense if you played the game. But yeah, I played this game this year. I bought it like a couple weeks after launch, which is super uncommon for me. I do not buy launch titles. I don't buy into hype. It's just not my thing anymore in life. But I had extra money or something, and I was like, man, I don't know. I want to play a PC game. So I bought it on Steam, and I absolutely loved it. I beat it. I started New Game Plus. I did not finish it because it's so hard. If you don't know,
I can't even imagine a New Game Plus on like those series.
Dude, it's pretty brutal. So if you don't know, From Software is a developer that created the Dark Souls franchise. And all of the Souls, so Demon Souls, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, are all from Software. And they made this game that's very different from Dark Souls in style and like how you play the game. You're not a samurai.
Are you not?
No, that's not a shinobi. You're a shinobi. And the combat is based on swordplay and sword fighting. So you are parrying, you're timing your parries, and you're slashing, and they're parrying you. It's very rock, paper, scissors. And there's a, it's just so different than Dark Souls, but it's still very difficult. That's where they share similarities. And I don't know what it was about this game, like this, everything. It's just so good. I really, really enjoyed this game.
I watched you play a good portion of it because you streamed a lot during yeah. that time on the NGP Twitch. And one of the things that stood out to me most in watching, first of all, it's a beautiful game. Like,
oh yeah,
it looks so good. And it seems like it ran so good too.
It did. Yep.
But the boss battles is what I just remember, because yeah. every boss had a strategy that it seemed like it was the boss battles that frustrated you most, because mm-hmm. it took multiple tries, but they also have multiple levels, or like you get them down to a certain amount of health and then they start acting in different phases. They've got different phases, and then they, I don't know, surprises, all of that. The boss battles is what amazed me most.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. Like, I would get very frustrated because you have to try it multiple times because it's so hard. Like, I can't even tell you. But when the satisfaction of beating those bosses,
yeah,
I really haven't felt that in video games in a really long time. And I think yeah, that's what drew me back to it time and time again. Every time I sat down to play was like, I haven't felt that rewarded in a video game in so long.
I'm actually surprised that you even decided to go back and play the New Game Plus version. I know you didn't get through it, but
yeah.
I literally can't comprehend how difficult that would be, because I know you said it, but we need to really make sure people understand if they haven't played these games. These games are known for being, I don't know, soul-crushingly difficult. Like,
yeah.
you have to figure them out. You have to learn the strategy, and you have to also, like, perform well. Like, if you're not
yeah.
good at hitting buttons in the right time and actually like doing the video game pieces of it as well, you're not going to just figure out the boss's gimmick and get by it.
No,
you gotta,
it's not just hack and slash.
Right. You got to no. be the whole package of a gamer, and it's a tall order. So I was surprised that you even wanted to go back for more.
Yeah. There's a clip on our Twitch. So I was streaming and I ran into a boss that I was not expecting to have to fight, and it was a repeat boss from earlier in the game. It's a giant monkey, and a second one comes out of nowhere, and you have to
no.
fight two at once.
Yeah.
And I beat it first try, and you need to watch it. I was so, so happy.
Nice. I bet you were hyped.
There's another one. I don't know if in the first battle you chop off its head, but
yes.
it comes back to life. Oh, and comes after you, and you have to fight it all over again.
It picks up its head after you chop its head off, and it starts running around with a sword
That's
in its hand now.
Great.
And it screams at you still, but it holds its head up to where the hole is in its head and screams. It's so good.
So good. So good. One of the things that impresses me most about this game winning Game of the Year, and I'm all yeah. for it, is that there's no DLC and not a lick of multiplayer,
yes.
yet it's still worthy of Game of the Year.
Thank yeah. you.
A true single player experience.
I'm happy.
And I'm glad too that those are like commercially viable and
yeah.
getting
yes.
lauded.
Especially,
for being good games.
Especially in this day and age. Like, I'm not against DLC. I'm not against multiplayer. I think they each have their own place, but there is something special about having a game that is just unapologetically
yes.
single player all the way, giving you this story. You know, I know some people would want a DLC, but I'm sure it's going to get another game in the series just because of how successful it's been.
Yeah.
So the first game that I want to talk about is a game that came out obviously this year. It is a puzzle stealth game developed by House and published by Panic. You may have not heard of either of those until just recently. The game is Untitled Goose Game. Now, this is a game that you might have thought that it was just going to be a meme and leave it at that. There is a game that came out maybe last year, the Goat Simulator, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was a couple yeah. years ago.
That was just chaos. I didn't play it, so I might be wrong. But
it was
as
a joke.
Far as I know, it was a joke, it was yep. a meme, not fully a game, not much to do outside of just create chaos. And I even thought that might have been what Untitled Goose Game was until my wife and I sat down together with the Switch in hand, booted up this very weird, odd game, and there's nothing else like it. It was so much fun. I've heard it talked about as Hitman, but with a goose, or Metal Gear Solid with a goose.
I've also heard references to Portal.
Wait, what? Y'all, hold on.
I don't Portal? Know. Look, I don't know if they're accurate, but I've heard people know, talk about it in that vein.
I know nothing about this game.
Okay.
So please help me.
Yeah. So the basis is this. You are a mischievous goose that has a checklist, and you have tasks on that to-do list that you have to check off in order to scandalize a once peaceful little town. So you are going from area to area. You first start with just kind of this farmer kind of guy. He's just tending to his garden, and you are creating havoc for him. You've got a checklist of things like steal the farmer's hat and put the rake in the lake, and absolutely ridiculous, ludicrous, silly stuff. But you are a goose while you're doing it.
Okay.
And it's just really funny.
So why is it not a meme or a joke? What makes it so good then?
I'm not saying it's not a meme or a joke. I'm saying it's not only a meme or a joke.
Because it fully has become a meme. Like,
well, yes. 100%. Even the creators. It's what the developers did, and you can actually read from them. They had many jokes that they thought of in this development. And then they were like, okay, let's now create that in game. So it was really just one joke after another with these different tasks that you had to do with the goose. Why, Nolan, I would say that it's more than just a meme is because that there actually is gameplay there. There actually is an enjoyment level, not just enjoyment level. You can get that with a meme game, but there's tactic and skill and puzzles, and you're having to maneuver this goose around, and to be able to accomplish these tasks, you've got to get very creative. And what's really cool about this is that there's not just one path to success. There's multiple paths to success. So if, for example, you need to steal the kid's plane, like toy plane or whatever, you might be able to do that in many different ways. You can quack as the goose when the kid is about to do something and make him drop his toy, grab it, and run away. Or you can maybe bring him a different toy to play with. Or you can, like, there's multiple different ways to achieve the goals that you are wanting to do.
Why haven't I watched this yet?
Yeah. Well, watching it is going to be one thing, but I promise you, playing it is going to be a whole nother experience.
That's so good.
This one's definitely been on my I need to play it list, because though I was more familiar than Nolan, I looked into the game some when it was just sort of getting hype and coming out and people were talking about it. I didn't jump in and actually play through it. And it's one of a very short list of games from this last year that I'm intending to actually pick up and play.
I will say that it's probably not going to be everyone's cup of tea. It's not like a straight up game, you know. You're not, it's no Fortnite, but it is in its own right.
I'm in
this beautiful, fun, challenging, absolutely silly, absurd game. The art is simplistically great. It's beautiful, kind of what they try to do with that. But the music is really where it shines. Puzzles are fun, but music. It is minimal. It's kind of piano-based. And it's sometimes it's even silent, but it's not soundtracks that are playing. It's this music that is somehow cued into what you as the goose are doing. So it amplifies and comes to a crescendo as the stakes increase or as you get closer to completing a task. And then it brings it back down when if you walk away from a certain scenario or situation. So it's super engaging. And then the ending of the game is actually quite beautiful. Like, it's kind of cool. And then it's even replayable. After you complete the game, it unlocks, I mean, I guess New Game Plus, it doesn't necessarily call it that, but you get a whole new
mode.
No, Kenny, but you do get a whole new list of missions to accomplish in the same town. So, but you're going and they're supposed to be harder than the previous ones. So all in all, Untitled Goose Game, great game. It is somewhat foul play, but it's definitely worth a gander.
I like the name of it.
I like Nolan just completely ignoring your jokes and taking all the steam out of you, Dustin.
I feel like that happens anytime that I try to do something like that.
I also like old video games, clearly. And so it's fun when an old video game gets new breath breathed into it.
One of the oldest video games?
I mean,
not one of the oldest. Just keep going.
Console release for video games. And so this year, a new title, free to play, came out. Free to play if you have access to it. So quasi free to play on the Switch, called Tetris 99, which takes the classic Tetris video game that lots of people know and love and makes it a battle royale. And so just because the idea is absurd.
Yeah, that sounds bad.
It sounds terrible, but I think it's fun to talk about because battle royales have been such a popular format lately. And in most cases, they're first person shooters and not my cup of tea. And so they make me roll my eyes. But then when that genre made the jump and someone made a game where you are competing to play Tetris better than other people and like knock out your competitors until of 100 people playing, or if 100 people, you and 99 others, only one person is left. And I thought the premise was fun just in general, but they also did a really good job making the execution actually have a little bit of thought and strategy. So what's happening is as you're clearing lines, depending on how good of a Tetris it is, like the number of lines that you clear, and if you do any of the more complex moves, like sliding some of the blocks into place or things that Tetris...
T-spin.
Yeah, that yeah, Tetris T-spins. Calls for, the T-spin, exactly. You can kind of get more credit to either like defend the blocks that other people are sending your way or to send blocks to other people's direction. And it allows you to actually choose either specifically an opponent that you want to send your blocks to by calling them out, like selecting them on the screen exactly, or it will dynamically pick based on a series of kind of criteria that you want it to do. So it'll like just attack people who are attacking you, or attack the people who are the closest to getting knocked out anyways, or attack the people who have the most badge progress so that you can try and take their badges and then have the extra sort of bonuses from that and snowball that. And so there's a number of different kind of modes and strategy where you're not just thinking about the puzzles going on that are the falling bricks, though you have to be good at that part to succeed. You also have to do this sort of meta strategy of seeing who else is winning and what's working and choose whether to play offensively or defensively. And it kind of adds just a whole nother frantic, crazy, large chaos that battle royales are so good at to this classic title. And it was a fun marriage of retro video game and new video game concepts put together.
Just the
me.
Fact that there is a Tetris battle royale is what throws me for a loop. Like, I never would have thought in 1,000 years that we'd have a Tetris battle royale.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, but I said, it sounds bad, but I think it's a good idea.
Well, I've heard really good things, and I know that like almost everybody that enjoyed Tetris that I knew that got this game really had a good time with it. Nolan, I know that it was somewhat short-lived, I think, for you, but you definitely got invested for a little bit.
Yeah, it was kind of like an end-of-stream, like, chill thing that I did, but I got pretty far sometimes. Like, I think my record was 11. I never made it to top 10.
That's pretty impressive, though.
Yeah, it was hard, like... You've got to be so fast, and like I didn't even worry about. You said that you can choose who you send the blocks to. I was letting it do that for me. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just trying to survive.
Right. Like I think you've got 4 different modes that you can move it to at any time. You can send. It's like, I think you can either choose who you want it to send to, or you've got your 4 different auto modes, and you can send it to who's closest to death. You can make it random. You can send it to who's attacking you, or like Kenny said, the badges, whoever's, best, which is somewhat dangerous. So am I correct though? Isn't there, is it like the original Tetris that there's only that one song nonstop?
The original Tetris had three songs you could choose from, if I recall.
Okay, but did this one just have that one?
I think it did.
I think that I remember that it was very limited. If it was one or two, I don't know. But that, to me, I remember it catching my attention and being, and I was put off by that because in this day and age, you could have created some incredible
missed potential for sure.
They definitely should have added some more variety there. But it was also classic Tetris to kind of have one song on repeat that's really hype and lets you get focused in the mode. So I don't know.
I'm glad you brought that up because when I first played it, by the way, this was Nintendo's way of like getting people to buy Nintendo Online, I think, when they rolled out with their online thing last year. And I thought to myself, wow, this feels extremely bare bones. I have one option. I can play online with everyone. I can't change the music. I can't look at music. And Tetris, originally was just two songs, but now it's many. Like, there have been many Tetris games and there's a lot of good music. And it would have been really sweet to have that option. I know that they did get a free update not too long ago that was like some Zelda update. Like, you could change the backdrops to Zelda themed or something weird.
I'm also pretty sure they shipped not like super expensive, but a paid DLC edition so that you could play single player offline, like against bots.
Oh,
well, that's good. I also remember when it came out that I thought that should have been something that was already included.
Yeah,
should
have.
Play this game by yourself.
I mean, it's free, so whatever. Yeah. I'll take it. Like, on paper, I think it's trash. In reality, it's actually really fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we at least now have a Fortnite for our generation.
Right. The next game that I want to talk about from this year is one that I've spent the most time by far on. By far this year, and it's Link's Awakening Remake. So it's actually just called Link's Awakening, and it's on the Switch. The community's been calling it LAS, so Link's Awakening Switch. And it's a remake of Link's Awakening for the Game Boy, or Link's Awakening DX for the Game Boy Color. And I am a really big fan of the original. I did speedruns of it. We've played it on the podcast, actually.
Not Switch.
Not the Switch one, the LADX.
The Game Boy Color, yeah.
Oh, I'm saying I did LADX runs.
Right. And I just said Game Boy Color. Was it Game Boy Color or was it?
DX was on Game Boy Color.
Gotcha.
It added color to the otherwise green original one. And it's a really weird Zelda title, but that's why it's one of my favorites. So it's kind of a bonus side game kind of thing, where you play as Link, obviously, and you're on Koholint Island. Your boat crashed, and that's why you're on this island. So Zelda's not even in this game. And it was originally supposed to be, and by the way, this is the original one I'm talking about, it was originally supposed to be a sequel to A Link to the Past, and it ended up just being a passion project for the developers. And this remake is such a good remake. It's so true to the original. It's beautiful. It's like, I'm trying to think of a way to describe the graphics. It's almost toy-like. It's childish looking, some would say, but it's so beautiful. And they did such a good job staying true to the essence of the original, but just adding like fun new look and feel to it. And I've spent 200 something hours playing it.
Oh my goodness.
And it came out in September, by the way, September 20th.
Well, you are, you weren't just playing it casually, of course.
No.
You were learning to speedrun it. You were in the community helping to even discover from day one of the release to discover speedrunning strats.
Yeah.
And so, like, we said it on air, but you need to be proud of, I think the highest rank you got was third or fourth
for a little bit, and then it got bumped to fifth
in the world. People in the world, R. Nolan had fourth for a time.
He's a really big deal.
It's a new game.
Well, I've never had fourth in a speedrunning category.
I felt good. I gotta be honest, it's been really crazy. I've stuck with this speedrun more than any other speedrun I've ever done. And it's because I did discover skips in the game, and that obviously adds some motivation there. And yeah, I absolutely love this game. I would recommend it to people that have played the original. Like, it's, but here's the thing. Here's my big beef. It's not a $60 game. I don't know why they made it $60. It should have been $40. Because it's a remake.
I can agree with that.
Like, it's not a new AAA game. It's a remake. And I think it's worth $60, but that's me, and I'm weird. But I don't know. I hesitate to tell people to buy it because it's so expensive. But it's so good.
If you don't want to shell out $60 to play it yourself, you can spend $0 and watch Nolan play it.
yeah, that's one option you have. I don't recommend it, though. I'm taking a small break right now from it.
You probably a well-deserved, yes, much-needed, yeah, break. As you mentioned, we played the DX version of this on episode 201, and I just looked back. It is our fifth most listened, wow, to episode of all time.
Wow. That's crazy. That lined up with something else, no? Or
I don't know. No? Was it just around the time of this release?
Right.
It was
been released. The game itself had come out not that long ago.
Well, when we randomized that game, it came out that week. And right. I beat DX perfectly for the podcast, and then I beat this game several times in that 1 week.
It must have been a Patreon pull, wasn't
it? It was Epic Dom.
That
submitted it, and it got chosen, and I was super pumped.
Well, absolutely beautiful game, compelling story, really cool graphics, music is beautiful. I agree with you. This remake, having played DX or playing Link's Awakening for the very first time, I did as a part of this podcast, then being able to see it come out in this version, it's so true to the original, yet is worth playing for someone that has played it and people that haven't. I think it's just, it's wide reaching, just an incredible, incredible game.
Yep.
So my second game, I think, is the most recent release out of all the games that we're talking about here today. It came out just this last month, November of 2019, by Respawn Entertainment and EA. It is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I was intrigued by this game from the very beginning when I first started seeing news about it. I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan of all time. However, if you guys recall, earlier this year, I had the desire to go through all of the different media from the beginning, chronologically, from the beginning to the end. I haven't done that. That's going to take a long time. And it's just current canon is what I'm trying to do, which is still massive. But I got all the way through the kind of like prequel stuff until I got up to the first movie. That one threw me for a loop because it's actually awful. And not the first movie, but episode one.
Yes.
It's really bad. And Jar Jar Binks is not even the worst, not even close to the worst. But so I've been in the Star Wars world a lot recently. So I wanted to play it because of that. And then everything that I saw made it look super amazing. We haven't had for a long time a single player Star Wars game where you can be a Jedi. And this game gives it to you. You're playing a single player story mode action game with one character that has one weapon, but that's all you need. It's the lightsaber. Well, two weapons, the lightsaber and the Force. And it's working for me. I was just playing some of it today. I haven't yet beaten it, but I'm fairly close.
I mean, it's really just one weapon and a tool.
Let's not get too deep here.
No, are we going to do that? Are we going to do semantics?
I'm kind of surprised that you bought it, knowing you. And you're like me. We don't do new games, really. Like, we wait.
We wait. And especially we don't do new PC games. Like, if I was a big console gamer, then I would do that more readily. But PC, you typically get burned. And so I stay away from that regularly. Knowing that I hadn't played many, read any 2019 releases, and this episode was coming up a few weeks ago, I decided to go ahead and do it. It's, and I don't regret it. But my fears of doing that remain. It's buggy. It has not been repaired, you know, where it needs to be. It's laggy. It's frustrating. It's not optimized for sure.
Hmm. I gotta say, I looked at some gameplay. I really don't know much about, or I didn't know much about it, but I watched gameplay. It is absolutely gorgeous. I'm so blown away where we are now in graphics.
For sure.
You forget.
And it. Yeah. Well, it is beautiful for sure, especially some of the settings and when it's not lagging, right? That's right. Those are some of the best scenes and best parts. However, it's no like GTA 5 or Witcher even. I think that both of those games surpasses this one in beauty.
Wow. Maybe it's just the setting that's so impressive. Like just being in space and seeing stars and
for sure.
ships and stuff.
And the different planets. Star Wars, like, they've always done a great job at realizing these creative environments.
Absolutely. Sure. Space fantasy is just fun. I'm with you, Dustin. I'm really glad that they decided to go back and do just a Jedi action game. I feel like that's what these games are best at. I mean, I guess Battlefront, like, that also works super great. And yeah. So there's lots
it's
of
just
potential.
Different, though.
Right. But for a single-player experience, I think the be a Jedi, run around with your lightsaber, do Jedi things is just a format that you can't beat. And so I'm really glad that they went that direction with this title.
Star Wars fans needed a game like this, I feel like. Like,
sure.
You can't really name another one.
Sure. Well, Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, but that's an RPG. Like...
Yeah,
I guess I mean
Force Awakens was sort of similar, but yeah.
I just mean like the action adventure style. Yeah. Like you're bound to RPG rules in KOTAR. In Battlefront, you're bound to, I don't even know what to describe that as. You're just fighting in a battle. Maybe that's the closest one. But this
well,
one
if you need any more clarification of what this game is like, it is Uncharted mixed with Dark Souls in a Star Wars universe
with a lightsaber.
So, yeah, that's what it is. And the lightsaber battles is where this game shines best.
Yeah.
The characters, the story, the environments, all of those are good. But the lightsaber battle, when you are doing well and you're feeling like a Jedi using your force powers and your lightsaber and dodging and all of that, it works really, really well.
Yeah.
To get to that point, it's going to take you some time. Or at least it's taking me some time, but it's a beautiful game. I'm glad that it's getting some recognition, and I'm glad that people are largely enjoying it, although I know it's very linear, so some people won't like that. I'm all about that. You know, I'm completely fine with linear. We don't need everything to be open world. But I'm glad that this came out this year, and I believe that we've got some kind of leaks or understanding that they're already working on a sequel. So hopefully we'll be able to see more in this universe. Okay.
Dustin, do you know if it was this title or if they released a different title? There was a Star Wars VR game that dropped recently as well. Was this also available in VR, or was that separate?
I played it.
Nolan played it. So is it?
A guy that I was with the other night had an Oculus. He won it at his Christmas party, and he has it. And it's
was it fun?
I'm gonna have to tell you about it. I was very critical of VR, but it was so cool.
Are y'all just talking about Beat Saber?
I don't know.
Is it just where music's playing and you're hitting blocks?
No.
It's like a real game, I think. But I think it is a different title. Anyways,
interesting.
I think the only thing better than playing a game where you get to control a Jedi is playing a game where you get to be a Jedi, which would only be beat by actually getting to be a Jedi. That's the
right.
The order
that
of
is
operations.
Top. Yeah, that's top tier for sure.
Right. The next game up that we're going to talk about intrigued me as a title, because when you hear what it is conceptually, it's even weirder than Tetris meets Battle Royale. This is a rhythm game meets roguelike, which sounds like the most ridiculous title or concept in the whole world. But a game came out somewhat recently by a little indie developer called Crypt of the Necrodancer. And the premise is that it was a rhythm roguelike video game. It was relatively successful. They decided, hey, we're going to go see if we can do some DLC that's Zelda themed, because that would be really fun. So they approached Nintendo and said, hey, look at this cool game that we built that's new and novel and doesn't play like anything else. We want to add a little bit of like Zelda flair to this game as a DLC. And Nintendo was like, we don't remember all the times that we've let other people touch our intellectual properties and ruined them. And we're brave for some reason. And your game looks great. Go for it. And it, as a change of pace, didn't bite Nintendo. And they came out instead with Crypt of the Necrodancer, or with Cadence of Hyrule, which is a Crypt of the Necrodancer title that's Legend of Zelda themed. It's a mouthful because really it is the gameplay of this indie game with a Zelda skin. This came out on Nintendo Switch.
So what's the title? So your game is what?
The game is called Cadence of Hyrule, Crypt of the Necrodancer, featuring the Legend of Zelda.
Come on. It's called Cadence of Hyrule.
I mean, it's not. Literally, if you look at the entire thing.
I think it is Cadence of Hyrule, Crypt of the Necrodancer, featuring the Legend of Zelda on Nintendo Switch.
That's ludicrous.
Regardless, we're talking about Cadence of Hyrule, which...
Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Just going to say the name repeatedly until everyone quits listening to our podcast. So, like I said, indie rhythm roguelike, which is super bizarre. What you do is you go through a Zelda world, well, a mashup of a Zelda world and a Crypt of the Necrodancer world, because you have characters from each, and you have to move your character in time with Zelda-themed music that is being played, and you encounter a series of enemies that each have a specific sort of movement pattern where they kind of dance in rhythm to this song that's being played in a way that is learnable and predictable, but that interacts with other enemies and with your environments in interesting ways, so that you have to like dynamically real-time strategize your fights all while performing these fights sort of in time with this overarching rocky version of Zelda music. It sounds like a lot and ridiculous, but it ends up becoming a pretty novel experience that they even went so far as to let you do multiplayer or cooperative locally multiplayer. I mean, if you're into that.
I played it and I was extremely skeptical when they announced it. I rolled my eyes. I did not care. I had never played Crypt of the Necrodancer, did not want to. And I was like, because I don't remember when they announced it, but I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, New Zelda. And then that's what it was. And I was like, okay, don't care. But I played it and it's pretty awesome. It was unexpectedly cool.
You played, didn't you? Is it another game that you beat? You played all the way through?
Yeah, but that's not as impressive because it's kind of, it's like The Binding of Isaac, which is a game that you play many times and every playthrough is a little different.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, so this one is kind of procedurally generated or it's randomly generated. The map is laid out differently every single time you play it.
Yeah.
So it does give some replay value there. I haven't beaten it, and so I'll tell you this. I think I saw you play it or saw someone play it and heard the music, and that's what made me get it, because the music is really, really good.
As a rhythm game, it had to be, and it had to be not only good, but they had to pick, like, if they're going to do Zelda, they had to pick big, iconic Zelda-known titles and then deliver them in a unique way, and they totally did.
They totally did. And that's not easy, but they did great with it. And then the gameplay is super novel. Let me ask you guys, because this genre, did Crypt of the Necrodancer create this genre?
Basically.
I think so.
Which,
it's impressive.
That's rare today to get a super unique new genre that hasn't been done before.
Yeah,
it really is.
They took rhythm game and they took roguelike and they made that. And who, first of all, like, you can't do that. That's that's it's not weird. Okay.
Yeah.
But it works like really well. And
I think, I think it's one that's going to work really well for those that it works really well for. And then some, I have a feeling, are just not going to be able to ever get it. I got it some, but still looking back on it now, it's a game where I never got great at the combat. And I'm sure I could put in the time and energy and effort, but being such a new genre for me, it really felt like that. And so it was difficult for me to fully enjoy it.
I think there's definitely a learning curve there. If the appeal of the game is there, but you just really, really hate the mechanics of having to like do button inputs on time, you can toggle off like the strict timing mode, I forget what they call it, and play it a little bit more casually where you're not quite as forced to do that. But I feel like that kind of robs from the whole point of the game. So I would suggest people try not to do that and see if they can't get a feel for it first and find enjoyment there, because it's novel and really well done.
I will say one of the cool things that they're doing is still releasing content for it. So I think even this week, new DLC came out, a new free that added a new story and a new mode.
And you could play as the villain, new character.
As the villain.
And
I also heard that they did some deep diving into the code and found that there might be even space for 5 new characters on top of that.
They're going to release more for sure. Like,
super interesting.
I love free DLC. I'm all for that. And so I'm going to check it out for sure.
So those are just 6 games that we wanted to talk about. There are many more that came out this year. I'm sure you probably wanted to hear us talk about one of your favorites. A few notable mentions that are worth noting: Fire Emblem Three Houses, for sure. And Nolan, I can't believe that you didn't want to bring that one to the table.
I mean, I wanted but I had to choose two.
Death Stranding, of course, big news.
Yeah.
Big genre shift as well. Kingdom Hearts 3. Pokemon Sword and Shield, and even Super Mario Maker 2. A few more titles that are worth noting.
Man, big, really, really big year.
Big year, for sure.
A lot of good games.
Big year with games, also big year with news. There was a lot that happened this year that transpired in the gaming community. We're just going to talk about 3 of those topics now.
Yeah, so one that I thought was pretty interesting. It wasn't like, it was headlines. And that's kind of why I want to talk about it. It wasn't an event. It was Ninja moving to Mixer. So let me define those two things. Ninja's a person. He is a professional streamer. He is a Fortnite player. And he is the most famous streamer of all time.
Wildly popular.
Wildly, wildly popular. Mixer is Microsoft's version of Twitch.tv. It's their streaming platform. You may have not heard of it. It's still kind of new, but they offered him boatloads of money to leave Twitch and to exclusively stream on Mixer. So now that you know what those two things are, I'm just really surprised and shocked, and I don't know what, at the fact that gaming professionally full-time is a profession now, and you can make money doing it. Our childhood selves are like fawning over that fact. Then not only that, we're trading them like sports professionals, like teams, and they're making so much money, and people watch them play this game. Like, you watched Ninja, Dustin. You told me about Ninja when he was not that big. I remember you watching him.
Yeah. My wife and I watched him before Fortnite was a thing.
Yes.
We were watching him play PUBG, and it was a big deal if there was 1,000 or 2,000 people watching him.
Yeah.
When he left Twitch, he had, I think, some 14 million followers at the time.
That's
crazy. I can't even count that high.
So to no one can. So to move to a new platform and to have to rebuild his audience is a big deal.
Yeah.
But he moved to Microsoft. He started his gaming career with Halo, And so a lot of it makes sense. Microsoft has more money than Twitch, I think. Switch is Amazon. Nope. Yep. I changed. Microsoft might not have more money than Amazon, but it probably has more money than Twitch. Twitch isn't Amazon. It's not the exact same thing.
Right.
But and Mixer's not Microsoft, but I'm sure there was a fat check that was written and some promises that were written. And I'm sure he just wanted to get away from the toxic Twitch chat. So...
Yeah, I honestly wonder how he's doing over there. Like, I haven't heard much about him. He's doing very well still, I think. Not only is he streaming professionally, but he's all over the place. Like, he has ad deals, and he was at the Game Awards presenting, I think. Like,
I think he was in Ryan Reynolds' recent movie, the video game one, the would not Free be Guy surprised. Or whatever it's called.
Yeah, so... I mean, really, really happy that
2019 is weird, guys.
It is weird. We have a Sonic movie. I'm happy for him. I think that is amazing. I would love to game it for a living. But I just thought it's such a fascinating time that we live in that this is now a job.
On March 19th of this year, Google revealed Stadia, which... they promised to be a game streaming service with the ability to play high-end games on your phone, tablet, or other device without the need to buy an expensive console.
Cheeky.
Conceptually, cheeky, it's a kind of cool thing. Indeed.
A very cool concept. And so we're still in the early stages of this. I believe that within the last month or two... at least some people have been able to play this or the early versions of this. So, and there's opinions all over the board here. Before we get to that. So Google hired Jade Raymond to start the Stadia Game Studio. You might know her name. She was the producer for Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2 and Watch Dogs. So she had some credits to her name. And she started the company, and they launched it to the public in the United States on November 19th. So just a short time ago, a month at the time of this recording. And the launch lineup was only 22 games, but it included some of the big ones like Red Dead Redemption 2, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Destiny 2 came out with its custom controller, and you didn't even need the controller. You don't need a console. All you need is a screen and... the ability to play on that screen, and you could use really any kind of Bluetooth or even mouse and keyboard that you want and play those games. They kind of pitched it as this Netflix streaming service because you are streaming the game as you're playing it. However, not only are you paying a monthly fee to be able to have access to that, you are still playing per game. A lot of people thought that you'd be able to have access to all of the games. No, you're still buying the games outright as well. Hmm.
Can I play Minecraft on it?
I don't know.
I'm out.
Can't. Look, do you?
I want to play Minecraft. Okay, whatever.
All so I have to buy the game. Is to play Minecraft.
I have to buy the game. Asking. Even though I own it on a different console, one.
Yep.
True.
Yep.
Okay. And I'm paying them how much a month?
Just $10.
Okay. I'm out. Well, okay. I can see why someone would be intrigued by that. I'm personally not, and I think it's too cheeky.
I get why people would be out, but the more that I've looked into it, the more intriguing of an idea it is. I don't think it's going to be the death to consoles.
Absolutely not.
But I could see it being a competitor. My one question is, can they get it to where you're not having lag, where you're not having latency, because you are streaming the game, you're playing it from the cloud, and if anyone can do it, it is going to be Google, in my opinion.
And I need an internet connection. That's right. Okay, I'm out.
Hey, for most console games nowadays, you have to be online the whole time anyways.
I know. But not all of them.
I think the technical limitations has always been the thing that's made me most hesitant because it's just a really hard thing to do. There's companies that have tried to do this in the past before internet was as arguably robust, though still, you know, lacking in plenty of places and ways as it is right now, and have failed really hard, partly because I think people conceptually weren't ready, but partly because technically this is not an easy lift. If anyone can do it, Google can. I still feel like it may be slightly early. In a world where the model changes and it's more of a Netflix and less of a buy and also access, but more of a just rent access, and in a world where, like, and we don't know how this will turn out either, but, like, 5G implementation has gone out and is really robust and actually covers people well, where you can get truly on-demand, low-latency, reliable wireless. Again, that's a whole bunch of ifs. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if it's quite ready for prime time yet. I could be wrong. Yeah. I haven't messed with it.
No, I think you're right. They're early. Like, I think the company that comes after them, or maybe the company after that, will be the one, you know? Like, the timing's not right.
I think it's Google. I think it could potentially be the future of gaming, at least a part of the future of gaming. But
yeah, not having hardware, doing the cloud compute or the edge compute is, like, that's going to be big, and that's going to show up in a lot of places, and I think gaming will be one of them for sure. Streaming game controversy isn't the only thing that not everyone bought into this year. There was also some big gaming controversy related to kind of non-gaming real-world big issues. Blizzard got in a world of trouble after they reacted arguably pretty poorly to some of their Hearthstone players expressing support for the protests in Hong Kong. Specifically, there was somebody who, a successful player, who at the end of a game made some pro-Hong Kong statements, and then Blizzard fired the commentators who were working on the game, refused to give that person any of their money that they had won for the tournament that they were in, and banned them from the game as well. And there was swift and really, really vocal backlash from the gaming community as a whole to say that they weren't okay with the way that the company had handled that. And it had an effect on the conversation around gaming and on Blizzard's approach to their big BlizzCon convention that it wasn't too far before, and ended up being a kind of pop culture something that got talked about broadly as the NBA grappled with some of these same topics, and as Apple and some of the ways that they interact with China got sort of brought into the conversation. And it was just a really interesting time to watch the popularity and mainstreamness of gaming hit the reality of sort of big life topics in our world, and what that means for developers and responsibilities they may or may not have, and really sparked an interesting conversation.
Now, not excusing the behavior of Blizzard in any way, but I do know that since then, even at BlizzCon, I believe, there was an apology of sorts. I know that they eventually got the Hearthstone player his winnings. And so they did try to go back and band-aid and correct and fix some of those things. Of course, for many people, that's not enough, and that they have that fans or previous fans of Blizzard have a lot of question as to who they're for and what they're about now. Yeah. But I know that there was at least some attempt at a correction since then.
I think their overreaction is telling. Like, they went ham, and it's like, okay. So I think that they did the right thing at BlizzCon to address it, at least kind of talk about it and apologize. Like, I actually was surprised that they even did that. I didn't know that they would do that, but they did that. And it's just kind of crazy how far reaching it is. Like you mentioned, Kenny, it's not only like gaming, but it was in other industries. And it's like, once again, kind of ties back to what I was talking about. Like the gaming industry is massive now.
It's huge. And it's part of our lives. And games matter to people, and like the world and the things going on in it matters to people. And so I see those things because the reality of kind of the world we live in is made obvious. And yeah, it's cool to see people that aren't comfortable with a government that's out there, you know, pushing its weight around or doing things that it shouldn't do or having undue influence on companies that, you know, is probably more than they should have.
It's so far reaching that we got mail about it because we said something about Diablo 4 looking cool.
Yeah, like just to give scope of how many people were aware of the conversation, that even a, you know, not hugely successful podcast.
Hey.
I mean, that's true. We've got a great set of followers. By every measure, we are successful.
Hugely.
Right.
Hugely.
Yeah, we're not like bigger massively than Ninja. Popular yet.
Blizzard was talking about us during this whole kerfuffle.
It's true. They were. We were after NBA and Apple, we were the next talking point. No, but that even one of our viewers was concerned about like continuing our continued support, quote unquote, of Blizzard as a company, just because we were hyped about a game that they have in development that's years down the road. And people care. Part of it is also when there's like internet outrage, like it's easy to also bandwagon on that. But when it's justified, I feel like it carries steam a little bit further than it does when it's not.
Yeah, it gets harder.
And so it was an interesting process of sort of forces all interacting, and watching it play out was really fascinating. And I don't think that we've come to a resolution yet on any of those things, on freedom of speech or companies and their influence or governments and how those things should go out. But we've got lots of time to figure that stuff out. And I think it's cool that the gaming community is part of that conversation.
So we want to do two more things as a part of this Christmas cast before we say goodbye to you for the year. We want to, one, look back on this year, some of the things that we've accomplished or done. And I'll just be honest with you guys. I, at first, in preparing for this, felt like we hadn't done much. And that this year was just a coasting year. And maybe it has been in the last month or two just because of the busyness of the season. However, as I did look back, we have accomplished a lot. I'm sure you'll be able to think of some things, but I'll just name a few that started the year. We finally got NGP t-shirts for the very first time.
That was this year?
It was early this year. We announced it.
Wow.
We announced it at the end of last year, had them available start of this year. Our whole new branding and redesign and website came out this year as well. Yeah. We did our road to 200 as we were preparing for our 4-year anniversary. And then we also had our first ever, but not last, 24-hour live stream.
Yeah. I mean, we're not certain that it wasn't the last.
No, it was not
too
the good
last.
To be the to be the
That
last.
Was a blast.
It was so a lot good. Of fun.
We, highlight. Dude, I'm proud of us for that. I'm not going to lie. Hey. That's one of my favorite things because we were pretty smooth with it.
Pretty smooth with it. Pretty good quality. Obviously, Hookshot helped us with a lot of the graphic sets, but that was a lot of fun. And we did remarkably well, every single one of us.
Yeah, especially for our first one.
We also had our summer pool party, which
fun.
Pretty much every other week in the summer, we were doing a Patreon pool.
Yeah, what a great idea. I love somebody suggested that to us, and we just jumped right on it, and it made for a lot of really fun big name games.
Yeah.
And so there's a number of like big titles that we should be familiar with that we hadn't touched yet that we got the excuse to touch this year, which was super cool.
Earlier in the year, we had a special guest on. We had a few guests this year, but one in particular was the creator of his own game, and it wasn't a retro game, but retro styled. He's also the creator of Diablo, and now he's our friend David Brevik.
Big of a deal.
Yeah, so David Brevik was a guest on the show.
Amazing.
Love it. I still think that's one of the coolest things we've had happen to the show to date.
I do too. That's really surreal.
And I'm pretty confident it's our first most listened to episode of all time. I think that's correct.
Wouldn't doubt it.
We did a March Madness, what was it, retro game competition?
Bro, this year that was stacked.
Yeah,
that was this year too. I cannot wait for next year's. It was so fun.
So much fun. And we learned a lot what to do, what not to do. So we'll be even better this next year. And then one other thought. And then if you guys think of anything else, I'd written down that we recorded a whole series, our second kind of mini series ever. You know, we've been doing Elements, which is ongoing, but we created Press Start this year.
That flew by, man. We knocked out how many episodes was that? Three each? Two each.
So six. That's we did our history episodes. With gaming, right? And then history, what was the other?
Influential games in your life.
And then influential games. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. That was really cool.
It was a big year.
It was a very big year.
That's crazy. I could have sworn t-shirts were like a year ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah, some of these things feel ancient, but they were all within 2019. Alas, we only have a few more days in 2019. We're about to move into 2020. So let us, just for a second, share what we hope to accomplish with New Game Plus in this next year.
I'm going to steal the obvious answer, but it's totally true. And we just talked about it.
Is it also super general?
No, we talked about it a little bit looking back. I'm just really looking forward to doing another 24-hour live stream. Like, it was it was a lot, and it was fun, and I think we got to stick one in, and I can't wait.
Are you announcing one right now? What are you doing?
We haven't talked about this. So you're thinking we should do one every year now?
I mean, we should do one occasionally whenever we feel like it's appropriate, and I hope that 2020 has one.
Well, likewise. I've got two goals. One is that we played Dungeons and Dragons together.
Yes, that's going to happen.
Well, I don't know at this point. We'll see. We recorded a great tidbit for you guys, and nobody liked it as much as I did. But along with that one, I really just have kind of one goal for 2020. We did a lot in 2019, and we'll do a lot in 2020, but my one goal is to up listenership. And I know that that's basic. I know that's general. It's kind of like a Kenny answer, but I really mean that. I won't say the number exactly, but there's been a numeric goal that I would like to see us hit for each episode. To hit within the first week a certain amount of listens, and I was hoping we would accomplish it for 2019, and we have not. And so while I'm completely content with, I mean, dude, our Discord has exploded over this last year, and it really is my number one social media source. Yep. But I would love for more people to be able to find out about and listen to our podcast.
Same. One way that I think we can help make that happen, and this is my goal because I'm kind of responsible for this and I didn't do it, getting our episodes on YouTube. Like, it's very simple. It's not that hard and it's not that profound. However, there are a lot of people on YouTube and a lot of people consume podcasts on YouTube. I was kind of surprised to find that out, but it's true. And if we can just get our episodes out there, I think that's a massive platform we're not taking advantage of. So, yeah, we're gonna get our episodes up and on YouTube.
Have we considered Mixer?
Ninja has.
Hey, as we wrap up this super successful year and look at what next year has, we certainly know that we couldn't do the things we've done without you. We have leveled up our content. We've continued to find new and more fascinating games to play. We've continued to interact with our community, and we love it, and we're looking forward to so many cool new things, and your support helps us do that. And so I know we say it all the time, but we really mean it, and as we want to spread the word and get even more people to be a part of this awesome community, you guys helping us do that helps us do that. Go figure. And so as we always do, we just want to pause and say thank you to every single one of you that gives on patreon.com to help us continue doing what we do, and especially to those of you who go above and beyond and support us at the producer level or above. It's so humbling that people would enjoy what we do enough to do something about it. And so thank you as always to Antonin, Ben, Dear Baby, Garlisle, Corey, Magzima, Zach, and Zion. You guys go way above and beyond, and we are indebted to you.
Thank you for joining us for this very special Christmas cast. Join us next year as we play dozens more retro video games. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
Saint Nick.
And this has been New Game Plus. Merry Christmas!